Two Geeks and a Marketing Podcast, episode 115, the one about naked audiences, YouTube changes and the film Hidden Figures. Let's get on with the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two Geeks and a Marketing Podcast. We are back for more news, tech, content, and wisdom from the world of marketing. And my co-host is a digital marketing veteran. He's a speaker, trainer, and advisor with nearly three decades of experience who enjoys revealing visual storytelling techniques to help you build better online campaigns faster. Please welcome Monsieur Pascal Fintoni.
Well, thank you very much. You've just heard from my co-host, a marketing speaker and consultant who spent his whole career helping his customers keep their marketing simple but effective. He's the author of Cat's Master Marketing Plans and the creator of the Roger Vlog video series. I give you Mr. Roger Edwards.
Oh, thank you so much, Pascal. I nearly said all the way from France then. That's why I slightly hesitated before I said your name. And of course, my brain then said, no, Pascal's back in the UK. We are here, episode 115, and we have a packed show for you, as always. Some interesting content to talk about, some fabulous marketing tech and apps, This Week in History, and of course, film marketing. And Pascal, I have never heard of the film that you've chosen for us to talk about this week, so it's definitely going to be an interesting conversation.
You are not the only one. Oddly, the title itself is also a mystery. Hidden Figures, released in 2016, telling the story of three women mathematicians who joined the NASA space race, Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson. And this is a story of space race, as I heard a moment ago, science. It's also about gender inequalities, it's about segregation, because this is taking place in 1961, but it's also about the first US officer in space, John Glenn.
Oh, wow. So I'm really, really looking forward to hearing about this film and, of course, to learn about how they marketed it and or how they didn't market it, as the case might be. But we've got a lot of content to get through before we get to the film marketing segment. So let's start, as we always do, with In the News.
Now, listen to this. Almost 9 in 10 marketers are worried about tech replacing their jobs, according to Gartner. 87% of marketers are concerned that technology, including Gen AI, could replace their jobs across industries.
According to research from Bazaar Voice, professionals in the UK are among the most likely to go back to the office, the research finds, with almost two-thirds, i.e. 68% of workers, returning to their desk for at least some of the week.
Well, Marketing Week's exclusive Career and Salary 2024 shows that around 37% of the 3,000-plus brand marketers surveyed point to a concerning lack of data and analytic skills within the marketing function.
AB InBev's volume sales declined by 15.3% in North America in the final quarter of the year. This was primarily driven by Bud Light over 6 months on from the boycott of the brand.
Yeah, well, consumer spending on grocery discounts and deals is up by nearly £600 million, Roger, in February, according to data from Kantar, as supermarkets compete to outdo each other on price in an ever-competitive environment.
And Guinness launches a month-long St. Patrick's Day marketing blitz. The Brewers' Lucky Sundays program nods to the Irish holiday falling on a Sunday this year and includes a tie-up with Ancestry.
Another tie-up for you. Warner Brothers teamed up with Snapchat for AR Dune Part 2 campaign. Users can ride the sci-fi blockbuster Sandworms with aid from AR as part of the promotion.
Oh, fantastic. And listen to this, Pascal. The big one at Blackpool Pleasure Beach has been the tallest roller coaster in the UK for almost 30 years. It actually opened in May 1994, so just shy of 30 years. But it is no longer the tallest. On March the 6th, which was 2 days ago, Thorpe Park topped off their new ride, which is called Hyperia, stealing the record away from the big one.
Well, I'm going to ask you right now, then, how do you feel about this?
As you know, I originally come from Blackpool, and I have a real soft spot for Blackpool Pleasure Beach. It is a open-air museum to fairground rides and roller coasters from many, many years. I mean, we celebrated last year the 100th anniversary of the Big Dipper, a wooden roller coaster, and we talked about it here on Two Geeks and a Marketing Podcast. The Big One was absolutely colossal when it was first built in 1994. And when it was first built in 1994, it was actually the biggest ride in the entire world. It didn't retain that record for long, but it did retain the record for the tallest ride in the UK for almost 30 years. And of course, now Thorpe Park come along and trump that. And it's only about 5 feet higher, so it's not a massive difference, but it's still, they've stolen the record. So now all eyes are turned back to Amanda Thompson, the owner of Blackpool Pleasure Beach, thinking, are they going to have to go and build something even taller to try and get the record back? And she has actually announced that a ride at Blackpool Pleasure Beach called the Grand Prix, which is effectively a kiddie car ride, which takes up a colossal amount of space in the park, is actually going to be removed and a new ride is going to be put in. So, of course, the nutters out there are all speculating that she's going to build something that will steal the height record back from Thorpe Park. So I feel it's really quite exciting just because that's where I come from and I have lots of childhood memories of that thing. A little bit more serious and a little bit more marketing orientated now. What's your opinion of this worrying statistic that says 9 out of 10 marketers are worried about tech replacing their jobs? Is this just hype or is this a reality that might happen?
It's a reality about a confusion about the marketing function. So let me expand on that. So very kindly, you asked me in episode 114 about my own experience of delivering a AI plus digital marketing masterclass. And what was very, very interesting is you're back to what one of our marketing heroes, Mark Ritson's talked about, the site circus. So if you think that your job is to create tweets and to create pretty images, as I've heard people say, sadly, and so on and so forth, then of course you should be worried. But if you understand what marketing is about, or pick up a book and brush up again, and you look at, the 4 or 7 P's, if you look at the strategic input, if you look at the consideration around customer service, customer experience, around pricing, if you look at the plethora of subject matters that belongs to that label of marketing, then you shouldn't be worried. You should be excited about the ability for you to support your employers even better and have deeper, more meaningful conversation. Or if you are in the kind of consultancy agency realm, you should be delighted to be able to offer better services to your customers. So I would say that maybe 6 months ago, I would have been maybe in agreement, but having gone in the trenches, if you will, I'm thinking, no, people have misunderstood two things, what marketing truly is as a function. And we can talk about, this stat from Marketing Week as well, about data analytics skill shortage, but also, how you use AI truthfully to support your strategic thinking and creative thinking more than ever before.
Yeah, I think it's so important that we just remember that the AI technology out there is a tool that we can use to give better service to our end customers. And you don't get replaced by tools because you need somebody to operate the tool. And we've said this on the podcast so many times, marketing strategy doesn't change. The technology that we use to deliver marketing strategy, of course that changes, but marketing strategy doesn't, and we need people to drive the marketing strategy. It's probably worth just noting that stat from Marketing Week around the 37% of people who were worried that they hadn't got the data skills to operate in a marketing function. And until this morning, my content spotlight was actually going to be a follow-up to this. And I think that, again, this is an example of where people are forgetting what marketing is. Yes, data is very, very important, but you shouldn't become overly obsessed with it. We shouldn't get into analysis paralysis. And the article that I was going to talk about in Content Spotlight was saying that actually sometimes you can look at too much data and that ends up ruining your campaigns because you try to be too specific and you try to home in on too specific a niche of customer, when in fact sometimes it's better to define your customer, obviously, but maybe to have a bit of a a safe zone around it so that you actually attract other people in as you're doing your promotions. So I think that it's a good message for people to listen to, that use the technology as a tool. Don't allow the technology to become your job. Otherwise, yes, it is going to be at risk. And the final one I wanted to talk about today, Pascal, is Guinness. I do like the fact that they are talking about the ancestry and they've woven this into the campaign. I think this is predominantly an American campaign as opposed to one that we'll see in the UK. But I do like that that it feels very Guinnessy, doesn't it? And the fact that it's on a Sunday as well, it's nice, and everybody's having the day off, and everybody be in the pub, and they'll be necking Guinness back like it's going out of fashion. But Guinness has a history of doing really good campaigns, doesn't it?
Do you think the marketing team was looking ahead at 2024 and realised it was a Sunday and you had literally, there was cheers around the office? Because, you know, on occasion, that's what we need. We need a bit of a break in marketing, you know, a happy coincidence or kind of planets aligning themselves and to be able to do that. But I like the as well. And I think there's a message for all of us, this idea of a month-long campaign. Because, you know, and I think I'm going to obviously blame social media for that, but this very disposable, very short, you know, kind of lifespan campaign, they don't give customers a chance to get it and immerse themselves in the experience that you want to create. So I am certainly welcoming the return of just longer campaigns. Take your time, take your customers onto a bit of a journey, as opposed to asking them to reset their mind and goodwill. If you see every day, it's like every day there's a new message, every day there's a new campaign, and it's just too much for an audience out there.
Yeah, we've got to remember that some of the most famous marketing campaigns in history, including the Guinness one of the, you know, the waves with the horses and the waves, they ran for years to build the reputation that they built. And again, you know, the short attention spans that we claim people have these days, we might actually be creating those short attention spans by not running things for long enough.
I want to ask you whether, and I'm going to put you on the spot there a little bit, but I want to go back to this business of Thought Park and Hyperia.
Oh, yes.
Would you consider in a future content spotlight to actually give us a recap on their marketing campaign? So Thought Park Hyperia, what did they do from a marketing standpoint to get, you know, the attention of, you know, their customers? Because I find destination marketing fascinating and full of lessons.
I would be absolutely delighted to do that. And do you know what, Pascal? I'm not actually aware of much that they've done. Whether the campaign is yet to begin, I don't know. But I've not seen anything at all. When you compare that to the absolutely stellar job that Alton Towers have done with the retracking of Nemesis, you know, Nemesis Reborn, it's called now, and you know, they are continuing that whole theater with the phalanx, and the, you know, they've now got these teaser ads going out. I think the new version of Nemesis opens towards the end of March, and that campaign has been, in my opinion, one of the best marketing campaigns I've ever seen in terms of the way it just, again, like you said, went on for almost a year. It was theatrical. It was teasing. It was creating hype. It was creating anticipation. Whereas, yeah, Thought Park have built something that's now stolen the record from the big one. But who knows about it? Certainly nobody outside the enthusiast community so far. So, yeah, let's let them get it out there and launched. And then let's make a deal that we'll go back and have a look at the marketing as a content spotlight later on. Great suggestion, Pascal. Talking of content spotlights, how about we dive deep into a couple of items this week and move on to the content spotlight section of the show? Okay, Pascal, tell me, what is in your spotlight this week?
Now, listen, so far for the last 3 years and more, we've been selecting articles, videos, infographics, ebooks for our audience. But this is for you, actually. This one was selected with you in mind. A video produced by TubeBuddy, And the presenter, narrator, if you will, is a gentleman called Judah Lee. And the title of the video is as follows: YouTube CEO announces the biggest YouTube changes. And I know that, you know, there's something that you're going to find interesting, but of course, I was jesting earlier, this is for all our viewers and listeners. So the reason I chose this one is twofold. I always try and find a content item that can also be a source of inspiration for all of us. So I recommend people watch the video from the point of view of how it was constructed, the script, the sections, and really kind of understand that when it comes to video, you've got two options. You either give people an account and share your expertise and advice, or you react to news items out there, you know, and something that Vaynerchuk talks about, you know, you either document or you comment, you know, so you document your day-to-day and share, obviously, your passion, or you comment on what's happening in your industry. And this is a very good example of what I get sometimes from my customers, which is, I don't know what to say. I am no expert. Who's going to listen to me? You know, all those worries people have. So I say, well, the easiest way, therefore, is to be that the ultimate business journalist and go out there, find something that, you know, you're going to react to and record your reactions and, by extension, your advice. And people are going to say, well, yeah, but, you know, Judah Lee and Chip Buddy, they've got a lot of money. They're going to do something, you know, really good. I said, I would challenge that. I would say, watch the video, because the way it's been done, it's well within anybody's reach. And if you know enough about video editing or have a partner, we'll talk about this. But let's move on to the announcements made by the CEO of YouTube. And what is interesting, it's doing with Judah Lee as well, is kind of given his own views on that. So number one, YouTube is turning up the volume on shorts and AI. And across the land, and you've seen it on video, everybody's going to be huffing and puffing, rolling their eyes, just like we did. It's just going to be dire. But well, here we are. Globally, Shorts, YouTube Shorts, bring to YouTube, the platform, an average of an extra 70 billion daily views. And that's 50% in increase year on year. And it would seem also, however, that this is not without its problem for content creators and for those in the business of using video marketing, because Shorts viewers do not become long-form viewers. And actually, Roger, you've spent pretty much the better part of the last year to prove that point, you know, with your own experiment. And as a result, also, because the Shorts are not becoming long-term viewers, advertising revenue is reduced and that is almost non-existent on Shorts. So it's not a great news for video content creators. That said, on the flip side, or as a means to pacify you, Roger, they're going to introduce additional video content creations supported by AI. So Good, Bad, and Ugly is going to be there. Which is going to lead, in my view, to more of what has been coined the faceless videos. You know, these videos where actually the storytelling is all right, the sound is all right, the narration is all right, but it's a montage of scenes and you never see the individuals talking there. So we are where we are. Not a big fan. And if you listen to what Judah had to say, he's not a big fan either. Number two, a four announcement. Creators will make more money. Well, we'll see. But currently, there are some inequalities that exist on the YouTube ecosystem. So lifestyle videos like gaming, traveling, cooking, and more earn actually a lot less. I mean, like a lot less than videos on financial advice. Digital marketing even is top there, which surprised me because I thought it would be completely bloated and kind of very, very noisy. So YouTube recognized the need to diversify income streams for creators, not just the advertising bit. So over the next few months, they're going to roll out things like storefronts, courses, membership, and more. As a consumer more than a creator within that YouTube environment, I don't know. I think it's going to get very messy, busy, but we shall see. Number three, TV is making a huge comeback, and YouTube have been looking at what they call the living room watch time. And what they are seeing is that there's a market really increased in the watching YouTube via a TV set as opposed to a mobile phone or tablet. And over the past 3 years, and watching YouTube on a TV set is now a daily occurrence and is also done with the family members together. That's interesting, isn't it? Because in the past, people went their separate ways with their small screens, but now the families get together. So the advice from YouTube and by extension, TubeBuddy, bear in mind that people will watch your videos on TV, and indeed, very quickly, we watch Right Vlog on TV every Sunday, as you know. Upload in 4K if you can, use high-res thumbnails, work on the first 10-15 seconds of your video, because this will be played automatically with no sound. Organize your content into episodes, because people are hooked in that kind of series consumption. And in other words, Roger, behave like a streaming service like Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Disney Plus. I would say study what they do when you log onto your Amazon Prime and emulate that. Fourth and final update from the CEO of YouTube: safety. And they recognize that particularly AI content is now becoming a huge problem on the platform. Deepfake, fake videos. So I've seen more and more now of celebrities, people like Joe Rogan, where they clone his voice and using low frame rates, you can't really tell the lip movement and lip sync. They make Joe Rogan say things that he's never said ever. So that kind of fake information with celebrities and more is going to be a real problem. And nobody's safe, by the way. You know, if any of us has uploaded videos on YouTube, people can clone our likeness and our voice and so on. So they're going to do just new policies, and even Judah say, well, what good if you're a baddie? It's not a policy that's going to help you do that. So for me, by extension, would say we need to educate ourselves about fake content, educate our family members and our sector. But here you go. Four new updates, you know, shorts and AI on the app, more money options, opportunities for the creators, watching on TV, a massive, massive trend, and safety concerns.
I mean, there's some good stuff in there, Pascal. The shorts bit just filled me with horror, as you would expect. I mean, I did experiment doing shorts last year on my channel. And you know, admittedly, the shorts often get masses of views compared to the long form videos. And that's obviously because YouTube are pushing the shorts out a lot more. But the engagement is lousy. And even if somebody subscribes to the channel as a result of watching a short, as you say, they very rarely then go and consume the long form video. So they don't become engaged subscribers. So they just become a number. And I think it's better to have engaged subscribers, people who comment on your posts, people who ask you questions, people who give suggestions about what they'd like to see you make a video of next. So, yeah, I'm a bit disappointed they're going to go all in on shorts, but the trouble is they're competing against Instagram, they're competing against TikTok, and you know it is incredibly popular, especially with younger people. So I appreciate that. One thing that I did pick up, which I haven't got access to yet, but I'm really looking forward to this, is they are going to allow you to effectively put in multiple thumbnails for videos, and they will automatically A/B test them. And what'll happen is when you upload a video, say you put in two thumbnails, YouTube will alternate the thumbnails for the first few days, and then it will analyze the data and decide which of the thumbnails works best, and then it will settle on that, which I think is quite an interesting move, and I'm quite looking forward to seeing how that affects views.
One thing we should ask the CEO of YouTube, on the basis that you can upload a 4K video, why is it that I can't upload a YouTube thumbnail that is more than 2 megabytes? I mean, please, because when I upload the 2 Geeks and Marketing podcast and my thumbnail is 2.2 megabytes and I get an error message, it's just absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I think there's a way around that, Pascal. I think, and I've been doing this for a while now, I do my thumbnails and I put them onto Dropbox and I actually use the YouTube Studio app on my phone to upload the thumbnail, and it doesn't seem to have a problem with bigger thumbnails if you use the phone to upload it. It seems to be a problem when you do it from a desktop. I've no idea whether that's true or not, but it seems to work for me. So Pascal, my content spotlight this week is, as I said before, I changed it last minute. One of the reasons I changed it last minute is today is International Women's Day. And this is an advert predominantly targeted at women, but I was extremely interested in this advert for a number of reasons. First of all, and I'll preface this by saying it's actually an advert for a women's underwear brand, which is probably a first for this show. But the background of the app is focusing in on a suggestion that is often given to people like us who do a lot of speaking at conferences and events and that sort of thing. If you get nervous, people say, if you get nervous doing a speech, one of the things you're supposed to do is imagine that your audience is naked. And apparently, if you do that, it immediately makes your confidence issues disappear. It sorts your nerves out and you'll go up on stage and you'll give an absolutely belting conversation. And I've never really understood this myth, because let's face it, if you go up on stage and you're nervous and you look at everybody and imagine that they're naked, you're either going to run off the stage in absolute abject terror, or you're just going to start laughing, aren't you? I've always thought it's a completely bizarre suggestion, but this advert builds upon this to very successfully sort of merge that trepidation that people have as being speakers with that myth or that reality and that suggestion that some people say you should do if you're a speaker. So what the advert does is it takes four women who are giving a presentation. I think one of them might be a stand-up comedian, and another one is doing a presentation to a small audience, another one's doing a presentation to a bigger audience. But obviously it focuses in at the start on them being a little bit nervous, and they've got a bit of trepidation from going on stage. But then they go on stage, and of course, as you would expect, you've got an audience of women wearing the underwear from Peach House, which is the brand in question. And of course, it's very nicely lit. There's quite a lot of style to the video. It's the storytelling's good, the jump cuts are good, and the lighting is fantastic. And it just all comes together. And I looked at it and I thought, okay, I don't really care about the myth, and I don't agree with the myth about imagining that your audience is naked, but for the purposes of this advert, I thought, wow, they've come up with something that is actually quite clever. And I imagine some people will actually dislike it because it's got women wearing underwear, but I think that the way they've built the story actually works. And I just think that because it's International Women's Day, I thought this one deserved to sit in the spotlight for a bit.
Yeah, and what is interesting, using again the fact that today, again, you know, great coincidence, you know, being the 8th of March, recording Two Geeks and a Martin podcast, I was reflecting on our journey for the last 3 years, and we've done actually very, very well to include, you know, particularly with This Week in History and many other segments, the shout-outs that are so rightly deserved for, you know, women working across in science, in technology, in digital, in marketing, and so on. But also this idea of what wouldn't you do an advert that is actually targeting, you know, that group specifically and create, you know, the story around it and then kind of marry them. So for me, it's back to, you know, what we said in the news about concerns that tech's going to take over your job. I would challenge anyone to suggest to me that an AI-powered solution could come up with something as inventive as that, but also as poignant in a way, you know, because it's what it's all about. And you left with thought and smiles and that kind of recall, which I think is also one of the challenges in marketing. Will people remember the message? Will people remember your brand? Will people remember, you know, the what you're trying to do here? And the only way they can do that is through story form, as opposed to statements. And you know, I've mentioned that time and time again on this show. It's hard, but it's really worth the trouble to get to the point of an interesting, engaging story with central characters. They have to go on stage and speak, and then you have that kind of flip on its head, surprise moment and reveal.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that absolutely love this advert. It's one of the first adverts that I've seen for a long time that's made me smile, but also made me think as well, because I know I fundamentally don't agree with that idea of to solve your nerves, imagine the audience is naked. But for this advert, it absolutely works. So some really good stuff there, Pascal. Let's go back in time, which means we need to fire up the flux capacitor. We need to set the controls of the TARDIS, and we are going to go back to This Week in History.
And in 1923, the phono film at the first motion picture with a sound on film track was demonstrated at the press conference by Dr. Lee DeForest, several years before the 1928 film The Jazz Singer, which used a Warner Vitaphone system.
In 1975, Gordon French holds the first homebrew computer club meeting in his garage. The club had an influential role in the development of the microcomputer revolution and the Silicon Valley tech complex.
In 2010, Kathryn Bigelow becomes the first woman to win an Academy Award for Best Director for her movie The Hurt Locker, about an American bomb squad that disables explosive in Iraq in 2004.
In 2014, Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, carrying 227 passengers and 12 crew members, loses contact with air traffic control less than an hour after taking off from Kuala Lumpur, and then veers off course and disappears, and most of the plane and everybody on board have never been seen again. Let's start with that one, Pascal, because it's 10 years almost to the day that that happened, and it's almost like a modern Marie Celeste, isn't it? So much work has been done to try and find out what happened. And, you know, we've read lots of conspiracy theories about it being the captain taking over the plane or terrorists planting a device or all sorts of things. But the fact is, the genuine fact is that nobody seems to know what happened, because there's been no trace, apart from a few pieces of wreckage, potentially. There's been no trace of this aircraft at all in 10 years.
I know. You're right. It stays with us. And it's almost one of those moments where you remember where you were when you heard the news, because, and then, you know, for days and days, everybody was hoping. And there was this awful, awful moment as well, if you recall, where because of technology and because of flaws in technology, it gave the impression that people were still alive because their Facebook account were showing them as active or present, if you will, that little green dot. And that was just an error. You know, it's just, it wasn't the case. So families, you know, I remember seeing the images of them waiting at the airport for news and brandishing their phone saying, well, I'm getting like a signal and so on. So yeah, 10 years later, oddly, as I was having breakfast this morning, it was mentioned as some kind of really sad anniversary, and we still don't know.
I know, and hopefully, eventually, we will find out. So let's be a bit more positive, Pascal, and talk about Gordon French and the Homebrew Computer Club.
I mean, I chose this news item. The surname is a pure coincidence, Gordon French. But what I like about it was this idea of individuals who didn't necessarily have, I would say, expert knowledge, just got themselves organized into a club meeting in a garage. And this grew legs and grew momentum to become essentially a voice for the microcomputer, personal computer revolution, and of course, encouraging investors to put money into the Silicon Valley tech complex. And for me, there's something really charming about it. It's pure nostalgia of me remembering with my dad going to the local community center with our Auric Atmos under the arm to plug into a TV screen and showing how we've learned to print, or how we learned the basic language to create like a very simple game and so on. And this feeling of discovery, but making it a collective experience, I long for it. And I'm wondering whether there's something in there with AI, you know, once we get through the nonsense and the false promises from the baddies, you know, once we settle all of us as responsible, professionals, this idea of let's get together over a Guinness, shall we say, and discuss, you know, our own discoveries and our own attempts to make this work. I mean, this homebrew computer club, the people were swapping bits of computers to build their own computers, and they were sharing advice, and they were writing newsletters which they used to print and put into the letterbox and so on. But this idea of making it a more of a collective experience than just on your own behind your computer, trying to, you know, essentially find out how it all works.
Nice. It's fabulous. I mean, I was a member of a computer club at school. Yeah, I was a member of a computer club at school. I mean, it was run by one of the science teachers who actually owned a computer, which, you know, early 80s, that was, you know, not many people did. And yeah, maybe I think maybe we should, you know, we should start joining clubs again, not online clubs, you know, we can all do that, but actual real ones in the local community, get together, start talking, start drinking beer and wine together and swapping ideas. It's amazing how, you know, old things come back. You know, a lot of people buy vinyl records again now because they just think the sound quality is so much better than digital. And maybe some of these ideas will fulfill us more if we actually come back to them.
Talking of swapping, I mean, the amount of time we're swapping cassettes in the school, you know, ground for the game. Who's got that game? And of course, then, sorry for all the game designers, we used to be able to copy from cassette to cassette so that my pals could play my games. And but it was also because it was all the ones and zeros, it was a basic language. You could have a ZX Spectrum, you could have a Commodore, you could have an Oric Atmos. You could all essentially support each other and distribute games. And of course, you had a friend who was so much smarter than you that had been able to design his own game asking you. So I was part of the first user groups for, you know, one of my friend's games. For all I know now, he's a billionaire somewhere in America. But you know, there was something really joyous about the participation in that, in a group memory, which I think, I don't know why, I'm longing for it, and we should start again.
Ah, that's fantastic, Pascal. And very, very briefly, just a shout out again for Catherine Bigelow and that remarkable film, The Hurt Locker. And I reckon that that is definitely a candidate for film marketing in a future episode.
Absolutely. But can we all say shameful to the Academy, you know, in 2010? Surely there's been an amazing, you know, contribution from women in the world of cinema that could have been celebrated way, way before. But there we are. You know, at least it was rightly deserved. And she's a great ambassador, like many others we've mentioned on the show, like Gail Ann Hurd and many others as well.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get back into the time machine and come back to the present. And it's now time to talk about some marketing tech and apps. Well, Pascal, tell me, what technological marvels are you going to talk about this week?
Now, people know that you and I love video as a format for content, for strategies, and so on. And I'm always looking for ways, viewers and listeners, to make your life easier. I'm looking at apps that can support the editing, apps that can support the creative planning, that kind of thing. So I've come across two that would like people to try out. So the first one is almost for video content creators who are just very busy. Time is against you. Or even marketers. And I must thank you for this one because this came about when I was digging into my DJI Pocket 2. And I've been doing some testing, although the weather is so incredibly awful at the moment that it's a quick in and out to play with it. But I was looking at ways to then edit the footage from the Pocket 2. And I came across a recommended mobile app from DJI called LightCut, which I wasn't aware of. There's so many, I suppose. People know that I turn to Quick if I'm very, very busy, and I turn to CapCut if I've got a bit more time for editing. But LightCut offers literally a one-tap editing. So it's even quicker than Quick, if you can imagine, where you select your video clips. You then click on the one tap edit, and using AI kind of auto magic, it will present to you a draft of that video. And for something that, you know, is probably very disposable, like a social media bit of content and whatever, I just think, you know what, that is not bad at all. Because what is the other option? That footage stays on your mobile phone for days, weeks, and months, and then eventually, you know, motivated to use it. So LightCut, I've got the hyperlink into the show notes. They also offer, of course, a full editing version. But I was looking for that, you know, how can I make your life easier? Secondly, how do you get yourself started in video marketing if you don't have video content? If you don't think that as yet you've kind of mastered your mobile phone and more, but you still want to actually improve your skills at a screenwriter, as a storyboarder, as a planner, that kind of thing. So I'm suggesting, perhaps strangely, to use an AI video platform called InVideo. Something tells me that you may have mentioned it in previous shows as well, but I want people to use it to actually understand the business of video planning, video production, and video editing. So what you do, you brief InVideo as though you would brief a real person. So already you learn how to brief, you know, video makers. You then are given a draft version of that video together with narration, music, and video footage, and then you can critique and improve upon it. So for me, it's almost, you can end up with something actually quite interesting, AI produced. It would be very, very, would have a very short shelf life. People would just move on, but you would improve vastly your skill in using AI-powered solutions in the future.
Yeah, DJI are really, really at the cutting edge at the moment, aren't they? And in video software and technology, obviously the Pocket 2, the Pocket 3, the Action 4 camera, which is their GoPro sort of equivalent. And of course, they are very famous for their drones, and some of which are gigantic, some of which are really, really quite small. So yeah, DJI, it's always a company worth watching. For this week, I ended up almost like tripping over a couple of marketing apps that I'd almost forgotten about, Pascal, but once used quite prolifically. And I just started thinking, you know, what is the shelf life of a marketing app? And the two I wanted to talk about, and we probably don't need to talk about them for that long, are as follows. The first one is called Click to Tweet, which I guess needs to be renamed. It probably needs to be called Click to X or stuff like this. But I used to use Click to Tweet all the time when I was producing content, and it still works, and it's absolutely a remarkable little app, because basically you can create a tweet that you want somebody to send out. So imagine you write a blog, and at the end of the blog you say, click here to tweet about this blog. And what you've already done is you've already written the words and any links or hashtags or anything, and when they click on the link that Click to Tweet creates, whoever's clicking on that link, it will immediately fire up their Twitter account or X account, and it will just have the tweet ready for them to press the button to go exactly as you've written it. And when I used to use this, and I used to use it with Protection Review a lot, and I used to use it with the Marketing and Finance podcast, which admittedly I've not done for a while, done an episode for a while, and it was so easy to set up, and it actually worked. People used it because you could follow it through the data analytics later to actually find out who had clicked on the link and who had actually tweeted it. And I just thought, oh, do you know what? I've never thought about Click to Tweet for so long. And I just wondered why. And is it because not really that much of a fan of Twitter since it became X and since Elon Musk has turned it into a right-wing platform of nutters, or is it just that it's just not the done thing anymore? But I just thought, wouldn't it be great if Click to Tweet came up with an equivalent, Click to LinkedIn or to Instagram or click to Facebook? You know, it was a remarkably good idea that surely deserves a little bit more exposure. And the second one, and again, it's almost like tripped over this. I used to use this back in the day, and it's called Brand24. And again, it's just it's an app, it's a website that allows you to listen to what people are saying about your brand. Good things, bad things, indifferent things. But it's a remarkably easy way of just keeping track of what people say about your brand. And as I say, I used to use this all the time, and at some point I've stopped using it, don't know why, and I've just rediscovered it again and thought, oh, it's really good, but I don't use it anymore. And I just, it just made me wonder, Pascal, have you come across anything similar in your own work, that something you use and you've somehow got out of the habit of using it and you haven't actually even thought of why?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, those two examples are perfect. But I remember, you know, being a very avid user of things like Google Trends. I was always on it, and many others mentioned. And this deserves a round of applause, because that's exactly what this segment is all about. You know, there's always this quest for the new shiny object. And, you know, I suppose you could argue we've contributed to that quite a bit. But also reminding people, there are some tried and tested, and actually they've paid their dues platform. But what I liked about Click to Tweet, by the way, was also visually, it was creating, you know, a bit of a break into the copy. Mm-hmm. It was almost like your pull-out quotes that you would try and organize in sometimes WordPress can be very difficult to use. But here you had something very visually interesting to look at, so people didn't have to click on it, but it was breaking the copy, was creating a sense of your thought about it, and Brand24 as well, yeah. But, you know, for me, this is where on occasion my own clients are very helpful, because they would ask me for things like this, and then somewhere in the recess of my mind, like you, I'd say, oh, I used to use that. I just somehow moved on for no reason I can recall, frankly.
Yeah, bizarre. But then we are served up a whole smorgasbord of new stuff every day. I suppose it's easy to forget about what went before it, however good it might have been. So some interesting stuff there, some interesting stuff. I will definitely be looking at Light Cut, I think. And now, Pascal, it's time. We've reached the film marketing part of the show, always one of my favourite parts of the show. But as I said right at the start, this week, the film that you have chosen is one that I have never heard of. So I'm really looking forward to talking about this right after the film marketing intro. Well, for film marketing this week, Pascal, you have chosen Hidden Figures, which was released in 2016. Let's have a look at the trailer.
Y'all gonna end up unemployed riding around in this pile of junk.
You're welcome to walk the 16 miles.
Or sit in the back of the bus. Like that.
You have identification on?
NASA, sir.
NASA? I had no idea they hired.
There are quite a few women working in the space program.
Least I can do is give y'all an escort.
Three Negro women are chasing a white police officer down the highway in 1961. That is a God-ordained miracle.
In 14 days, astronauts will be here for training. And we're shooting a human into space, and it's never been done before.
With the launch of the Russian spy satellite, the president is demanding an immediate response. Running from the
man. Space test group needs a computer.
Catherine's the gal for that. She can handle any numbers you put in front of her. You and I are
different from each other. This is about inventing the math, because without it, we're not going anywhere.
Yes, sir.
That's John Glenn.
What do you gals do for NASA?
Calculate your launch and landing, sir. How could you be ogling these white men?
It's equal rights. I have the right to see fine in every color. Oh,
if you were a white male, would you wish to be an engineer?
I wouldn't have to. I'd already be one.
Yes, it's an uphill battle.
Get a girl. But guess who else
is playing? I don't know if I can keep up in that room.
Just make that pencil move as fast as your mind does.
You've been gone for 300 hours.
Felt like it to me, too.
Colonel Glenn launches in a few weeks. We don't have the man figured out yet.
There's no protocol for women attending.
There's no protocol for a man circling the Earth either, sir.
Every time we have a chance to get ahead, they move the finish line.
I need to be in that room hearing what you hear.
Within these walls, who makes the rules?
You, sir, you are the boss. You just have to act like one, sir.
We have liftoff.
We all get there together, we don't get there at all.
In the fight of our lives, people.
My gals are ready. We can do the work.
More than 50 million Americans watching.
I got a warning light.
Go find Catherine.
Colonel Glenn.
There's a real fireball outside. It's getting a little hot in here.
So now, Roger Edwards, is this the first time you've seen the trailer?
It's the first time. Honestly, Pascal, I have never heard of this film. Never heard of it at all. I think I might have got confused with the title. I'm pretty sure that when I went to look for it, after you'd suggested we do it, I ended up looking for Hidden Things as opposed to Hidden Figures, which possibly suggests why I didn't actually manage to find it. But no, even when I realised I got the title wrong, I think I just don't know this film. But having seen the trailer, yeah, obviously it's a historically significant event, and obviously it's International Women's Day today, so very apt again. But definitely want to watch as soon as possible, and no doubt what you're about to tell me about the film and about the way it was marketed will give me even more enthusiasm to get it watched at some point.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, people can find it online currently on Disney Plus, who bought in the 21st Century Fox some time ago, and that gives actually them an even better kind of portfolio. But this movie, so I've seen it twice. I will confess, each time a few tears at the end because it's so emotional, because this is about real women, you know, but also this idea of a lesson for all of us about how hard it is to necessarily know or always what has happened before and the effort we have to make and how thankful we must be to book authors, filmmakers, and so on. So this movie, Hidden Figures, is based loosely because it couldn't respect every single bit of the history and every single characters, loosely based on a book by Margot Lee Shetterly, who was also asking the questions about those women who contributed to NASA and the space race in the early days of computing, and the fact that not only were they women, but they were African-American women. They were also in a world dominated by men, maths and science. So what you have is a movie that takes you on this journey with a backdrop of music from the time, 61, but also new tracks from Pharrell Williams, so we can discuss that as well. And as an audience, you're literally sat there taking on board this tapestry of science history, the space race, you know, the fact that the Russians were first. What about the Americans trying to do that? Gender inequalities, racism, segregation, but also leadership and vision. Because the character played by Kevin Costner, who is a composite of different leaders of the time, of, you know, the ladies, Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson being there. They say the movie is not exactly like that. It's all compressed into a two-hour bit of storytelling, but the messages and what it's trying to do is correct. So it's a very enjoyable movie. It's a family movie for sure. And if you're watching with a young audience, they'd be completely flabbergasted and completely thrown by particularly the bit about segregation, where, you know, black people had to sit at the back of the bus, or they couldn't go to the same toilet, so they had to use a different part of the restaurants and so on, which is completely incomprehensible for an audience that was born maybe, you know, in the 80s onwards. You and I have a sense, we grew at the tail end of all that form of racism. But and more importantly, for me, the message is about, if you have a dream, if you have a passion, if you have a talent, just go, and don't let obstacles get in the way. From a movie production point of view, this was filmed in the summer, give or take, of 2016, and had a kind of early release in December, and then went nationwide in America in January. And what was interesting, we can discuss that in a moment, you know, it was in the screens in January. It had a very, very low, slow burn release globally, which didn't help, I think, for its visibility. But from January and the screens, and then in March, so 2-3 months later, it went straight to digital and straight to Blu-ray and DVD. And I can't wrap my head around this, whether it was a smart move from a revenue generation point of view, Roger, or a marketing nightmare. That, you know, you barely have any time to market it, that it's already out there for people to download and or to watch. So let me take you very, very briefly through the marketing campaign.
Okay.
And then we can discuss your reactions. So the marketing campaign started in April, more or less as they were filming, with the announcement of the cast and crew. And then the press, the radio and TV kind of took over. Then they did a thing that you and I have spotted before in other films. They start to have exclusive deals with magazines and the likes by sharing images. You know, did a very extensive report on the Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power, where they were sharing some of the images with some of the newspapers online and print. And if you were a fan, you had to seek it out, almost like this kind of treasure hunt. The summer, things obviously accelerated. They went for festivals, so you could say this is film marketing 101. But one that they did very well is a bit of a PR stunt with the Lego company and NASA. So what they were doing here, they were asking people to vote for essentially a Lego version of the three women working for NASA, you know, that are represented in the film. So there was some interesting link with family occupation, Lego bricks and building, NASA, the science bit, and of course the real people. And once the first trailer was released in the August 2016, then the campaign was off. And I'm going to resist temptation to talk about, you know, launching and all that kind of rocket analogies and so on. But they had a bit of a marketing pack, which was a combination of 20-second teasers, so extract from the films, with that kind of kinetic, you know, animated text. Of course, when they could, they had birthday celebrations. So in 2016, Katherine Johnson was they wished her an happy birthday. Very quickly, she lived to the grand old age of 101, which was just unbelievable. There was more Lego involvement with the artist and more behind-the-scenes footage. But it became a campaign for me thanks to two things. Number one, the Toronto Film Festival. They had a live Q&A on Facebook, and they also had performance by Pharrell Williams. And the track from the movie was also released, you know, for the audience. So there was a lovely kind of autumn phase there. And they went for a premiere in New York, which was the 11th of December 2016. But there was a bit of a bad news. Unfortunately, bear in mind this movie is about John Glenn, the first man into space in 61, and everything that came with it in terms of the difficulty in building the very, very first spaceship, you want to call it that, and the maths that came with it. He sadly died 3 days before the New York premiere, a film about a moment in his life that's so important. I can only imagine how absolutely heartbroken everybody was from cast, crew, and the marketers, because I think it would have been quite just for him to be in that room in New York and to have probably, you know, the accolade that was rightly deserved. So from the premiere in New York, they kind of then went for a live Q&A at the NASA headquarters in Washington. Of course, you're going to do that. So the cast and crew and so on did all of that. And then we moved on to the release of the movie. So very compact, very, 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 very tight. And when I looked at it, I was thinking, okay, so we've got some very elegant posters. And I may ask you which version you may prefer. So you had the launch poster with Hidden Figures. And you had the follow-up poster with a different design. They had obviously two strap lines that they worked with, you know, meet the women you don't know behind the mission that you do, which I think is wonderful. And they also then use a three-part strap line, which is another method, you know, strength has no gender, courage has no limit, and genius has no race, which is part of it. And then really that was it. And to me, I was kind of thinking, was it too compact as a, you know, from pre-production to production to whatever? Was it okay? And what I will say, though, its legacy is quite something, because to this day, this movie and the campaign that came with it is responsible for getting more young women and girls to take up STEMs, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So we're back to the power of story. And during the post, if you like, cinema release campaign, so many organizations, so many nonprofit groups organize free screenings for young people in disadvantaged communities out there, that it feels like, you know, a very, very proud moment in a kind of US history, both what happened in 61 with John Glenn, but also what they managed to do out there with this movie. So I'll stop there, having given you a whistle-top tour of the campaign to kind of get your reaction, but also question, was it a bit rushed? Should it have taken longer with this exceptional movie, as you'll discover very soon?
It seems to me as if it was a good campaign. I mean, there's a lot of nice visual material. And as we've come to expect on film marketing, was plenty of social media activity. And they were doing all the things that we recommend people to do, character studies, using social media to focus in on those characters. I love the posters. I think I like the first poster, meet the women you don't know behind the mission you do. It's nice and simple. And of course, you know me, I like it when things stay simple. Maybe it was just compressed into two shorter timescales, but maybe, and this is the conspiracy theory part of me now, wondering, you know, you made that comment about, you know, we just haven't got the ability to conceive what the world was like in the time that this film was set, and the fact that these people were treated like they were and segregated like they were, not allowed to ride in the front of buses and all of that sort of thing. And, you know, is there an element of that still going on, Pascal, that's almost suppressed the movie? I would like to think not, but
likewise,
know,
yeah,
and, you know.
And I will say, if there was any attempt, it has failed to the point where the communities in the US, you know, took it on board. But I, you know, for me, I'm reflecting on it as well. You know, you talk about Catherine Bigelow in the This Week in History, saying, "Is there, you know, a challenge with regard to because history is so vast, and with each passing year, there's more data to accumulate, to record and whatever, that we're just getting the headlines, whatever you read a book, whether you won't see. And it's too rich now in in figures, should I say, in characters and so on, for it to be memorized fully and to be understood fully. Because people are, you know, on Facebook reacted saying, I'm ashamed I didn't know about this. I said, well, be careful. You know, you're only the receiver of the message. You know, what about historian? What about, you know, other ways in which we do that? Is it that actually, sadly, the media give too prominence to, I would say, the entertainment world? So people know everything there is to know about a particular singer or performer, but we don't know about the individuals, and particularly women, who contribute to the betterment of society. So this movie is so rich and has simulated debates throughout. And within that, I've been thinking, you know, this marketing campaign, it was tough, it was short. I mean, literally, it was less than a year between filming and releasing at the cinema. We've seen movies that take 2 years for filming and then a year-long marketing campaign.
I'm trying to think of comparing this to a similar sort of film about space travel. So Apollo 13 springs to mind. And obviously that had a much more recognizable and successful campaign. Obviously, maybe they focused in on the actors a bit more there. Maybe the actors were a bit more well known, but it does seem to be a little bit bizarre. And I also wonder whether there's an international flavor to this. Is it the fact? Is it just did this work in the States? And I mean, it's absolutely great that it's led to more women being interested in taking up careers in these areas. Is it just that it was this campaign just didn't hit the UK, didn't hit Europe, but it was successful in America, and that's why we're sitting here thinking, well, it didn't hit any notes for us? Or is it just the fact that it was squeezed into too tight a timescale and was surrounded by other stuff going on?
You're right, and you know, from the marketing point of view, there would have been concerns about what the other producers and production company were releasing. So let's do this now. And the fact that this movie, Hidden Figures, would have been squeezed out of screening rooms for other blockbusters and more, then maybe it was the right move to say, well, we want more people to see this movie. It's important. Let's move on to streaming, DVDs, Blu-rays, and so on. So, you know, for me, it's always fascinating to look back something that happened 7-8 years ago and kind of, well, what were the circumstances, you know, back then? But to your point, you know, do we know enough about the European space missions? Do we know enough about, and back to this idea of, should we be more curious and seek it out as opposed to being just reliant on what the media may choose on our behalf that is, you know, kind of newsworthy, or what YouTube's algorithm suggests, you know, is a good short for you. And I think for me, it's why it's so rich about this movie. Hidden Figures, you know, they were hidden for a number of reasons. And I think, I wonder, and I'll ask you again once you've seen the movie, whether Hidden Figures was also about the mathematical figures, because you'll see that as part of the movie, the real challenge, and this is where those mathematicians, women and black, played a part in essentially keeping John Glenn safe.
Yes.
You know, because one decimal out and the guy was not coming back or was blowing up into space.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, it certainly opened my eyes a little bit here, Pascal. You know, when we've looked at so many campaigns over the last few years on Two Geeks in the Marketing podcast, and in the main, they've been successful campaigns. Mm-hmm. And this is the first one I've come across where it seems to have all the elements that you need for a successful film marketing campaign, all the elements, be it social, be it trailer, poster, events, you know, Q&As, media, TV spots, and yet it just doesn't seem to have spread the word, hence why, you know, it's a film I've never ever heard of.
Yeah, and I think there's been a couple of things that surprised me when I did the research. So the, you know, 20th Century Fox, I have an official YouTube channel, so they have the videos and that kind of things. And within the description, which has been updated over time to include, you know, the links to buy the DVDs and Blu-ray, they have links to things like the website, and they have links to things like the social media. and they are all broken links.
Yes.
So you also, and I get it, you know, listen, they produce hundreds of movies a year. They can't be on top of everything, or should they, you know, have a better system? But within that, what I will say is, I was looking at the way in which they wrote the description, because YouTube descriptions are so hard. And I will say this is absolutely stunning, and maybe the way we should end this from marketing review.
Yeah.
So they write about Hidden Figures, which is the incredible untold story of Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson, brilliant African-American women working at NASA, who served as the brain behind the greatest operations in history, the launch of astronaut John Glenn into orbit. A stunning achievement that restored the nation's confidence, turned around the space race, and galvanized the world. The visionary trio crossed all gender and race lines to inspire generations to dream big.
Wow. I think we definitely need to end on that one, don't we? Well done, Pascal. Thank you so much for choosing something, again, that I've never heard of. But I think you've convinced me that we need to watch this film at some point in the future. And thank you, everybody, for watching Two Geeks and a Marketing Podcast, or for listening to the podcast version of Two Geeks and a Marketing Podcast. Let us know what you think of the film Hidden Figures. And also, let us know what you think about the items that we've discussed today, the content spotlights, the history, and the marketing tech and apps. We love your feedback, and we would love you to suggest films and marketing tech that we should review on the show. Thank you once again for watching or listening, and we will see you on the next episode. Until then, please go out there and make sure that your marketing is done right. I was Roger Edwards, and he was Pascal Fintoni.